This is Fresh Air. The pioneering documentary filmmaker Albert Maysles died last week at the age of 88. Albert and his late brother David made the 1976 film Grey Gardens, a study of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis's relatives Edith Bouvier Beale and her daughter Edie, who lived in squalor in their decaying mansion. Grey Gardens was adapted into a Broadway musical and an HBO movie. The Maysles film Gimme Shelter recorded the Rolling Stones performance at the 1969 Altamont Festival, where a fan was stabbed to death, a dark counterpoint to the Woodstock Festival that was staged earlier that year. The brothers' 1964 film What's Happening, The Beatles in the USA, followed the Beatles on the first 5 days of their first American tour. The Maysles shot other documentaries about Bible salesmen, Marlon Brando, the artist Christo, Vladimir Horowitz, abortion, hospice, and Muhammad Ali. The Maysles described their documentary style as direct cinema. They didn't use sets, scripts, or narration, and were led by the philosophy that a documentarian should show up without predetermined ideas and let the story naturally unfold. I spoke with Albert Maysles in 1987, less than a year after his brother David's death. He described what it was like when he started making documentaries in the early 1960s.
I was one of the photographers, and I had, and along with me was a sound man, and that was the whole crew. And in two or three of our major films, my brother and I, who later began our own company, that was the crew for Grey Gardens, for Salesman, and it was the ideal way for us to operate it, and it meant that we could tell stories as they were happening rather than have to rely on narration, music, artificial devices that came in afterwards as a way of rescuing something that you just didn't get on its own.
And you wanted your presence as filmmakers to disrupt the action around you as little as possible.
Right, right, because we believed in getting the story itself, that was the revolution in journalism that Life magazine had started. That nobody was going to tell anybody what to do when a photograph was being taken, and we weren't about to tell anybody what to say or to do in filming them. It's an idea that actually was long overdue. It couldn't come about until the technology existed for it, as it was developed in 1960.
But nevertheless, you were the one who had to lug around the camera.
Right. 25 pounds of it.
Yeah, did you do anything to customize your camera to make it more portable back in the early days when you were starting?
Yes. Well, I redesigned the whole thing so that it didn't need a tripod. It could rest on my shoulders in full balance without even having to support it with either hand. I had it low enough down so that both eyes could look over the camera and see not only what through the camera but also outside of the camera, so that I was suddenly a human being rather than just a technical device recording something. And I put an exposure meter at the end of the lens of the camera, and so that I didn't have to put the camera down in order to change the aperture if the light conditions were changing. It put everything at the service of the film.
Let's talk about your 1969 movie, Gimme Shelter, of the Rolling Stones concert at Altamont. This is the concert that ended in the murder of one of the fans. I think it was Hell's Angels who were responsible for the murder. Now, were you filming that as it happened?
Yes. Well, we had four or five camera people there. Most of them got drugged up by being given wine that they didn't know was loaded. And so it was really another cameraman and myself who did most of the work at the Altamont concert. And so for that particular scene, my brother happened to be with the other cameraman, so he's the one that actually filmed it.
What were some of the ethical questions you had to ask yourselves when you got the footage and had to decide how much of it to include in the movie?
Well, actually, we didn't ask any ethical questions.
Really?
Because we didn't feel a need to. We just behave as one normally does in a crisis, and if one is ethical as I think we were, then we did, I think, what was ethical. But there were ethical questions that were raised once we made the film, and one of them was whether to use the material of a killing in a film. And The New York Times Review, I remember, was headlined Making a Murder Pay, as if to say that we were very happy that that we had the material and that we were using it because we wanted to exploit that fact. But on the other hand, had we not included it in the film, I'm sure it would have been equally unethical since or immoral, since it was an important part of what took place. I think the alternative probably would have been to have made a film like Woodstock, which attempted to make the Woodstock generation and a very happy, unfettered event. And it turns out that it wasn't quite entirely that. Nor were the events of Altamont entirely of a disaster nature. So I think that we were fair in representing what had to be shown, and fortunately, we were there at the right time to get the killing as well as a lot of other significant things that happened. I mean, significant enough so that I think that the film probably is, in filmic terms, the clearest representation of that generation for that decade.
Did you ever talk to your brother about what was going through his mind when he realized that there was a murder taking place as he filmed?
Well, in truth, he didn't know, nor did I know.
He just thought it was a commotion.
I was only about 20 feet away, myself, filming Mick Jagger. And neither one of us knew what was going on except that there was a scuffle. So there wasn't that ethical question either. Although it's an interesting one, it always comes up in one's mind. Will there be some time in my career as a cameraman where I have to make the choice between stopping a killing or filming it? And I think one is so strongly compelled to tell what's going on as a movie maker. One thinks that somehow or other, if that crisis occurs, that you'll be able somehow or other to do both.
You've funded most of your movies not through grants, which is the typical way that documentaries get funded, but rather through making documentary-style commercials and industrials. How come you never went the grant writing route?
Well, I think that, for one thing, by the time you get a grant, having put all that energy into it, it's such a frustrating effort that you might even lose interest in making the movie, or the key elements of what were to take place, you know, had already taken place, and it's no longer a good film. And then you find yourself committed to an organization or organizations that have a hard time because of the bureaucracy, you know, getting you out of it and slipping you back into another film, which would be more interesting at that time. It's been said so many, many times that that an artist, whether he's a writer or a movie maker, you know, relishes and needs the opportunity to express something that he can't even put into words, except that it's a heartfelt part of his soul that he needs to find expression for. And that sort of stuff that's deep inside you, you can't express unless you were a writer, which I'm not. I can only express it by making a movie, because that's what I am, a movie maker.
Albert Maysles recorded in 1987. He died last week at the age of 88.